Welcome to the Living Leaders Podcast, a space for leveling up your leadership and your life. It's no secret that business as usual is broken, but what is going to take its place? That is what we're here to explore on this show. Our guests are reshaping business norms and defining the future of work, all while healing people and planet in the process. On this show, we don't shy away from the inner work either, because often the biggest transformations start within. I'm your host, Nicole Belisle, leadership expert and educator at Harvard University and founder of Living Leaders Institute. I've spent over a decade empowering thousands of executives and business owners globally. At Living Leaders, we believe every single one of us is a leader and has the ability to spark change. Thanks for being here, leaders. For practical tips and tools for scaling your impact more consciously and regeneratively, make sure to subscribe to the podcast, leave a review if you found it valuable, and sign up for our newsletter at livingleaders.org. Now, let's embark on this journey together. Hey leaders, I'm joined today by Kevin Keppel. Kevin is a top-ranked podcast host with his show Unlock Your Freedom, which I had the pleasure of being on and joining him for a conversation over on his show. So if you haven't heard that, definitely go check out our conversation on his show as well. Kevin is the founder of Keppel Coaching, where he leads a team of coaches and creatives. Kevin is an author and also a certified strengths coach and executive coach. And his zone of genius happens to be helping others find their genius so they can step into aligned lives of purpose and unlock more coherent cultures within their teams, but really beyond that and into their lives so that they can start feeling like they're living a life authentic to them. Kevin, through his own journey and through all of the work that he does with leaders and executives, he's really familiar with the deep inner work that comes with the hero's journey of stepping out of a template that's maybe not working and stepping into one that looks like you designed it. And we get into all sorts of amazing topics today, from how to make that jump of even having the self-awareness to notice that you're maybe not in alignment with purpose or not showing up authentically. What does that look like? What are some of the symptoms of that that get normalized in our culture? How do we turn to self-sabotaging patterns to stay stuck in behavior or cultures that are not actually healthy for us? And when it comes to transformational leadership, Kevin is really attuned to a lot of the trends and the supportive practices that help leaders find that custom version of their unique purpose, unlocking their unique gifts so that they can really embody their genius. And I really enjoyed the conversation with Kevin. I did the last time we talked as well. I'm sure we'll have him on the show again. And I just know that you're going to really enjoy this. So thanks for being here and let's get into it. Kevin, it's so good to see you. Welcome to the show.
What's up, Nicole? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I had such a good time on your show last time, and I'm excited to bring your wisdom to our listeners here on the Living Leaders podcast. And I'd love to get your full humanness in the room. This is a place I love to start, not just the work journey, but really what makes you you? What makes you feel really alive or in flow? Help us get to know you through that lens of aliveness.
Sure. Oh, gosh. You know, I think I feel the absolute best when I'm getting to create the way I want to create, you know, with who I want to create with, even if that's alone sometimes. But I think just really understanding how can I, you know, spend the majority of my time doing what lights me up and helping other people find ways to do the same. And, you know, we're all in this thing together. And for the longest time, I did what I was supposed to do. You know, I was winning on the scoreboard, but I was disconnected and on the inside and everything was like heavy and hard. And it was really frustrating and really miserable. And I didn't understand that at the time. I thought I was like happy, but you know what? Like life is short. It's meant to be enjoyed. And, you know, how can I make the biggest impact I can make with my gifts and really just continually letting go of needing myself to be a certain way to be okay. And, you know, just having, not that I need it, but giving myself the permission to just go out and be free and to not worry about the outcome and to help other people do the exact same thing. Because I think that so often we get jaded in that comparison game. You know, it's like we're looking at what we're supposed to be or what other people are doing. And like, that's not the reason we have all these great gifts. You know, we have these gifts so we can continue to grow them and share them with other people so they can do the same thing with their gifts. And the closer I stay aligned with that, like, the better everything seems to work.
I love that. Wow. So it seems like you've kind of made that transition into finding that aliveness, living life on your terms or in your own template, which is something we talk a lot about on the show. And I'm curious to know more about what did that story and that jump actually look like for you? Because it can be intense to realize, wow, I'm in this template. I'm doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing or what everyone around me is mirroring back as success. But then to go against the grain and make that choice to be different or to follow a passion that maybe isn't incentivized in the previous template can be kind of hard. So I'm curious what that looked like for you when you made that jump.
Yeah. So I love that word template they were using. That's such a apropos, right? It's like, no, this is how you win at life. You do this and then you do this and then you do this and then you're happy. You know, like none of that works. but for me, gosh, I went to college like, you know, a lot of people, right? And I remember sitting in there talking to the advisor and like, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And she was like, well, what do you want to study? And I'm like, because that's business, right? I was in the business program. I'm like, I don't know, like doing business, I guess. Like, I had no idea, right? Like I want to be successful. That's what I want. And I chose strategic management and entrepreneurship because like I knew I didn't like being told what to do. So at least I had that much wherewithal. But, you know, I got out of college and I worked in different roles, but I was in a like sales role eventually and I was having success. Like I was winning on the scoreboard. I was winning trips and I was helping a lot of people and I was making good money. And I had a cool office on the 10th floor with a cool view of the park. And I couldn't have been more disconnected from the work, but I didn't really understand what that meant at the time. And I was all of a sudden I wasn't winning. And like, I started getting these diminishing returns and like the harder I worked, the less was coming my way. And I was really confused. I'm like, what happened? I'm doing the same things I've always been doing. I'm even doing more of it. I was super busy, but I wasn't productive at all. And then I started personalizing the lack and started getting like really sideways and like, you know, how we do anything is how we do everything. So pretty much like everything in my life was feeling these repercussive effects of this negative kind of mindset I got stuck in. And so fortunately I had the wherewithal to get a business coach. And he was awesome. His name was Robert. Robert had been in the Secret Service for almost 3 decades. And I guess, you know, they see what's not there, right? That's their job, right? To see the unseen, so to speak. And he was like, I think it was like our first meeting maybe. And he's like, well, you know, tell me about your career and tell me, you know, this, what you like about it. And I was like, well, here you go, Robert. I love this and I love that and blah, 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 blah. And he's like, dude, hold on. And he's like, I don't even think you like your job, man. I go, what are you talking about? And he's like, dude, you're not even looking at me. You're like squirming in your seat. You're like, all the signs of just, you're not telling the truth. He goes, I don't think you're intentionally lying to me. He's like, I don't think you know. And I would love to say I was totally humble and accepted that. And I was like, yeah, you're right, Robert. I was like, you know, of course I like defended myself. I started like BCD and all over the place where I was blaming, complaining, defending. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe you're right. And what I really liked about the job was I was the director of sales. I really liked helping other people, you know, create their best stuff. I really liked helping other people make new decisions about who they were. And I really liked the training and the coaching piece, but I didn't like anything else I was doing. And long story short, Robert was like, man, I think you'd be a really great coach. And then some limiting beliefs that I had kicked in and I was like, no, like I don't want to struggle. And there's like a coach at every corner and blah, 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 all this other stuff, right? He's like, all right, man, when you get over yourself, let's talk about what you do want to do, right? And so long story short, I finally listened to him and I got a job with a company that's based here in Dallas. And it's like a $4 billion company and global company. And I was a national sales trainer and coach for them. And so I got to coach people every day for 3 years that I worked there. And I got so much joy out of helping other people just be more of the things that make them great. And less of the things, you know, less of those takeaway, helping them transcend those limitations that they had created or somebody else had created for them or whatever. And I think it's so phenomenal when you look at your calendar, you feel energized by the work that you're doing to do, as opposed to the Sunday night where I was going to bed and I didn't want to go to bed because I didn't want to get up on Monday, do the thing with the people, right? I was like, I'm miserable and dread. I was like really present. And like, I don't know if there's any happiness. There might've been like modicums of pleasure, but pleasure is like short term, right? That's like looking at social media as pleasure. I don't want pleasure. I want long-term happiness. And, you know, that's what I pretty immediately started getting when I was in the coaching and mentoring space. And, you know, I kicked off my own company a few years ago, and man, life has been really good. And so, yeah, that's the transition.
It's amazing. Robert sounds like a hell of a guy. Sounds like he turned up right at the right moment.
Wow.
There's so much that I resonate with in your story, and just hearing that Sunday night dread even takes me right back to those memories of, you know, crying in the shower, even on a Monday morning, being like, I don't want to go. I don't want to do this. There has to be a better way. And getting all the way to that edge of really the body starting to shut down, right? Because we're trying to protect ourselves. There's a self-preservation mechanism here. You can only drain yourself beyond your energetic or physical capacity for so long until you are burnt out, and now the body is doing really its best work. It's doing its job to protect us from the factors that are at play there. But I want to, besides taking me into my own memories of a similar moment, I wanted to circle back to something you said around self-awareness and how there was a moment where it was like, I don't even know if I know what I want. And Robert is kind of seeing that, he's reflecting back. And so it sounds like there's this piece of self-awareness that got cultivated. And I'm curious to hear more about what you experienced in your own journey, but also what you see in clients in this moment of, okay, I know something's off. My body is signaling to me that something is way off, but I don't know what I want. I've never seen something else modeled. I've never seen a different version of success embodied. So where does one even start in your world of coaching and what you've seen when it comes to cultivating that self-awareness and even investigating these things so that we can make different choices?
Yeah. What a phenomenal question. You know, it's so wild because like we're never, you know, I think Seth Godin said it in his book, The Practice. He's like, we're never going to be creative making copies, right? And that's what the template you're talking about is. It's a copy of somebody else's version of happiness, joy, love, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, dude, without love, like, what's the point, right? Love is like the one constant, you know, like love, dude, we are based in love. And the alternative is fear. And fear is like this repetitive, replicative, you know, life where we're just reacting to these past pain patterns that we have. And you know what really shifted me, like was a huge game changer for me, was when I took Strength Finders by Gallup. And I'd taken that not too long before I started working with Robert, and now it's called Clifton Strengths Assessment, but it's the same thing. And I took it and I looked at it. I remember I got the report and there's like 34 talents listed, right? Like, and I was like, doesn't say anywhere that I'm like the most awesome in the world, whatever. Like they're on the shelf, right? Like walked off and went about my business. And Robert was like, hey man, like if we have this report that highlights your natural talents and your gifts and the patterns of behavior that give you these elite performance, maybe we should get to know it a little bit better. And I probably argued a little bit about that. I was a little resistant back then to pretty much anything that didn't line up exactly with what I was seeing. But, you know, I've learned to be more humble, thankfully. But I pulled it off the shelf and, you know, blew the dust off of it. And it was so cool because for the first time, not that I needed it, but I felt like I had permission to be me, because everybody plays that terrible game at some point, the comparison game, right? And it's like, we never walk away like, I'm just like that person. It's always inferior or superior, right? It's one of those two. And, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, comparison is the thief of joy, and like joy is love expressed. So every time I compare myself to other people or compare myself to where I should be, I rob myself of joy, why would I want to do that? And like, I have a brother who's 2 years older than me, and Max is awesome, but I always like joke with him. I'm like, dude, it's like he was born like 80 years old. He's like wise and mature. Even when we were kids, like we'd watch cartoons. He's like, that's not logical, you know? And like he had a bank account when he's like 7. And I'm like, he just like does the right thing. And he's like responsible, and just, he's always been an adult. And he's, after taking Strength Finders, especially after seeing his, like he is like almost directly my opposite, like where he's slow and methodical. I'm like, dude, I just want to jump off the cliff, build my wings on the way down, like Johnny Carson said, because I think better when I'm in action. But I would always like try to be good at things that he's really talented at. And of course I'm not good at those things because I'm not built that way. And so really cool when I finally understood that, hey, you know what? Like positivity is one of my gifts. And I used to turn that down because the people I was working with, they weren't that excited about life. They didn't really have that good of attitudes across the board. And so I'm like, maybe something's wrong with me. Maybe I'm like too happy. Like what a ludicrous thing to think. And so I would turn that down and like, dude, that's a massive superpower, having the energy and the, you know, the attitude that allows you to see the good in the hard and to tell yourself that you can do hard things, just the energy to start, the energy to keep going. And you know what? It's okay that maybe I'm not slow and methodical. It's okay that I can't build things with my hands, but I can do so many other things that so many other people can't do. And really cool. That was a huge shift for me. And I actually, it did so much for me. I went and got certified by Gallup to coach and train with strength finders because it helped me so much. I wanted to share that with other people. And like at this, now I've helped like, it's like through workshops and one-on-one, I've done thousands of people. I've helped them shift to higher levels of being them, right? Through this awesome tool. And there's like a lot of other stuff that goes to it. But to your question, like finding our passion, finding what we love, right? It's like those two questions. It's always like, what do you want? And why do you want it? Right? The two best questions you can ask yourself. And the what is like passion, right? What am I passionate about creating? What do I love about what I'm doing? And that's great, but passion's kind of selfish at the end of the day, right? Because it is about me. And so I want to make sure that I'm mixing generosity into that. And that's where the why comes in. And Strength Finders identifies like these patterns of behavior that you're going to exhibit that give you the most energy, that you're going to find the love in, and really allow you to create these elite performance of whatever it is you're doing. And, you know, when it comes to genius, and my opinion, at least, I feel like it has far more to do with, you know, getting into the habit of expressing from your talents as opposed to, you know, just this natural gift that, you know, we're out of the box. I'm just awesome out of the box. Like that's not really how it works. I don't believe it's getting into the habit of expressing your patterns of genius on demand. And maybe more importantly, understanding what it looks like when you give all that power away. And, you know, that probably starts with EGO, right? Ego. It's like anytime we start listening to that false self, right? That's where the danger starts.
Totally. I love your phrasing of helping people to unlock new levels of themselves, really, because each one of us, I also believe, is this unique blueprint. And there's a regenerative quality that you seem to be pointing to here, where when we're in that gift, it fills us back up. And now we start to fill those energetic reserves. We can actually do more with less because it doesn't feel like work. And I often think of this as a living system in a way. And I think leaders, at least as I'm kind of sensing in the field, right? So even the Harvard executives that we teach in this executive sustainability course that I'm a part of, there's more talk about energy management than ever before, where people are realizing, wow, things are only getting more complex out there. When I take a big hit, like if I'm really passionately trying to move something forward and I'm empathizing with people along the way, there's a ton of energy movement there. And when I take a big emotional hit, if something gets, say, shut down or it doesn't get approved or the budget gets cut or whatever it is, what can we then turn to fill ourselves back up so that we can keep going? Because we're really no good to anyone if we're burnt out. And I just so appreciate your illumination there of it's actually more sustainable within self to be in our gifts. Because when we're comparing ourselves to the Joneses and trying to follow someone else's template, not only are we dimming our light, which actually takes effort. It takes effort and energy to dim our light and not be ourselves. And that's something that I don't think I realized until recent years. I was putting so much energy into being someone else. And it actually frees up a lot of energy, not to mention self-love and the health benefits that come with that. Like there's so much that we're missing out on and might not even realize it. So I'm just appreciating the regenerative quality of this type of self-leadership that you're naming here.
Yeah, like what a great word, regenerative. Oh man, that's like, it's totally possible to do things that, you know, require energy, but also give us energy at the same time.
Yes.
But when we're doing things that are counter to our nature, like that infinite side of us, that it's like your cell phone has every app like turned on and it's just like draining. and it's hard. And then we look at other people who are winning a certain way and we think we should like win that way. Like, you know, like one of the strengths in Strength Finders is woo. It's like winning others over. And like, that is not one of my strengths, but you know, people with woo are the ones who are shaking the hands and kissing the babies. They get energy from talking to all 500 people at a 500 person event. And like, that's awesome because they protect the rest of us from energy. But you know, if I try to be like that, like it feels really fake for one, but it also takes so much energy. Like I love people. I'm an extrovert, but I definitely have introvert tendencies, right? I can't be around them all the time because like I feel like my spring is always sprung, right? If I'm just like with people, giving it all the time. And man, like that's just a form of resistance. And it's so dangerous just to try to be this false version of greatness or whatever you want to call it. And like, that's a complete, you use that word empathy, right? It's a complete lack of empathy for yourself and like your needs and your future needs. And like, I think empathy is one of the most underrated qualities of leaders, right? I don't need you to like agree with me, but I want you to understand me, especially on my soul level. Like, what, how am I feeling? Right? Because that's the world we all live in, right? Like, and I'm always going to remember how I felt when I leave you. Like, I might not remember all the words, but I definitely know if I felt good or bad when I was around you. And if I felt bad, probably don't want to be around you too much. Like, you know, nothing personal, or maybe it is, but it's like, I want to be around people that make me feel good and, you know, give me that energy.
Yeah, definitely. I'm similar in that way. I'm naturally an introvert, but I can be extroverted. But there is that point where I'm like, okay, if I keep going, I'm crossing my own boundary. So when you said lack of empathy with yourself, I realized, wow, that it's actually an act of love in a lot of ways to honor our boundaries and have that empathy for ourselves, meet our needs, set the boundary so that we can really be clear in our lane of purpose or in our channel of purpose. And so, yeah, I'm seeing this desire among a lot of leaders and business owners to get into that zone. It seems like many of us are leaving the old template, finding a new one that looks as unique as we are, basically. Like we're all kind of creating a custom template for our lives based on our values. And one thing that showed up in receiving your last share there was, I was thinking, well, gosh, when we're trying to be someone else, we're probably not operating from our values or the principles that mean the most to us. Maybe I am taking on the values of overproductivity. I'm internalizing the culture that I'm steeped in my company, in my team that I'm a part of. And maybe those values aren't actually mine. Maybe they're harmful to my inner culture and how I want to turn up in the world, how I want to relate to the world. So I think taking a look at these values and these layers of our own enculturation is part of how we get to build integrity within a lot of these choices. And I'm curious, are you also seeing people kind of leaving the old template in droves? And what do you think this, if you are, what do you think this means for the evolution of business and the evolution of what leadership even is or is becoming?
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant perspective. And like, that's pretty much the majority of the people that I get to serve. It's people who, whether it's an executive or an entrepreneur, they've created, you know, this level of success and they're winning on the scoreboard, kind of like I was, but they're just not feeling it anymore. Or maybe they never did. And they've really come to understand that they're serving somebody else's purpose. Whether it was like, you know, one of my clients, like she's awesome. And like, she was making $500,000 a year, right? Like that's good money. Right. And she's like, I think I'm living my dad's life. And she's 40 years old, right? She's like, I don't even like my dad that much, right? And I definitely don't want to live his life because I don't think he's very happy. And, you know, it was so brilliant the way that she was able to accept that she wasn't right, right? Because a lot of people, I feel like, sabotage getting what they want just to be right. It's like, no, I'm right about this thing, even though it like totally sabotages me moving forward, which, you know, Kevin in the past too, right? I'm guilty of that one, but you know, better is the goal, not perfect. And really just helping her really just focus on what she did want and like recalibrating that internal energy and aligning with the natural genius that we all have. It was so cool because she was the president of a company. She quit, started her own company, and like I'm like, under a year's time, this was during COVID too, she like doubled her income. Happier she ever been. But, you know, to your point, she maximized her energy. So she went from working, you know, 40, 50 hours a week to 30. And like the chaos became ease, peace, and flow. And like really what she wanted was to be happier with her family, happier with her husband, happier with herself, and to feel like, you know, what she was doing mattered to her and to the people she was doing it for. And like, man, it's so cool because, you know, what is it? 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, right? Like the number one self-help book recommended out there. It used to be old school, but it's like, make sure your ladder's leaned up against the right wall, you know, like you're climbing the ladder to success. Like, but do you even want to be on that ladder? And like, it's okay to change your mind. It's okay to pivot. I don't want to be busy. I want to be productive. I want to be, you know, inspired and empowered by the people I'm with and the work I'm doing. And I'm not going to do that by just grinding it out. Like that is a clear sign I'm headed in the wrong direction when everything's hard and heavy. And, you know, we were talking about burnout earlier, and for the longest time, I didn't understand there was different types of burnout, right? I was like, oh, it's just when you're so busy, like your hair's on fire, but you don't have time to stop to put it out. Like, no, there's also like bored burnout when you're just completely disconnected from the work. And I was like, that's where I was. And, you know, there's also like confused burnout. Like I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing like ever. And so that's hard. And man, like, gosh, it doesn't mean you have to have the best answer, but you know what? Like, are you happy? Yes or no? Like, cool. Like maybe what changes do I need to make to start moving towards happiness? Mm-hmm. And just being open to a better way is such a gift that you can give yourself. And it's so important that we do that, because if you're not bringing your best stuff into the world, then you're giving away part of your power, and you didn't create that power. So I don't feel like that's yours to waste. And you know, the point is to grow as much as we can so we can give more. And then if everybody's kind of in that place of doing what they're uniquely suited to do, doing what they love to do most, like that's inspiring to other people. And then like, how happy of a world will we have when everybody's working on a purpose they actually love and they're serving each other? And it's not about you versus me. It's about us and this co-creating, co-elevating, innovative relationships.
Ooh, lots of wisdom there. Kevin, I knew you were going to bring it today. My gosh, I can't help but think of burnout in those different types as symptoms in a way too, where it's like we have all these different flavors of it and we're living in all of these symptoms and we're putting tons of money and tons of resourcing into treating symptoms. But what is the deeper issue at play here? Is it not being in alignment with our purpose? Probably. Is it not being in generous, compassionate relationship with one another and instead just extracting value for value's sake? Like there are all these things where if you kind of peel back the layers of the symptoms. And we say this a lot in the cyclical leadership work that we do. So I do a lot of work with leaders who have menstrual cycles, and we look at how do you build momentum cyclically and mimic nature in this way, because nature is incredibly energy efficient. Like nature does not ever waste energy. And here we are running around in our productivity over obsession. And we're like force, 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 like, let me crush it. Let me get it done. Like even in our language, it's like kind of insane what business or entrepreneurial language has become and how normalized this mentality has become. But what if we, when we have the symptoms of burnout, what if we're not the thing that's broken? what if the template is broken? And I relax into that of like, oh, if I'm burned out, that doesn't mean that I'm wrong. That doesn't mean that I'm broken and need to fix something or take a pill or numb myself with alcohol to be able to show up to a template that wasn't designed for me. Because I mean, especially as someone with a menstrual cycle, I could tell you going hard all day, every day, all days of the month that's not actually a model that's designed for my particular body and my hormonal cycles. So yeah, I love that you shared the different layers of burnout. I think that distinction, because it's such a hot topic right now, burnout is just everywhere. And even work trauma, I'm hearing this term show up a lot more, there's flavors to that. But I do think that they're all kind of symptoms and probably a product of this sick culture that we seem to be in. So a lot of what you're doing, I actually see as deeply healing work to self-heal, to come back to our purpose, to learn how to be kind to ourselves and replenish our bodies. And I'm curious if you in this pivot, what has your own healing journey looked like, and how has maybe your relationship to work or to productivity changed now that you're kind of operating from these different principles?
Oh man. Well, I used to definitely punish myself in really, really painful ways. Like I've been sober for like 15 years now. And like the whole reason that like I wasn't sober prior to being sober was I was punishing myself for not having all the answers. I felt like I should be this certain way and, you know, have all these gifts and I don't even know how to use them. And like, I was just stuck in this like vicious, like ego cycle. And it was all like fear and avoidance, avoiding the fact that, you know what, like, I don't have all the answers. I was afraid to detach from the outcome. I needed to know everything. Like for 3 decades, like I lacked the ability to say, I don't know and mean it. Quite literally. And that, like, that's ego. Like it has to know, it acts like it doesn't know if it, you know, even when it doesn't. Right. And it's so annoying to be around people like that, like, because get stuck in that really opinionated place. And like the greatest thing I think I've ever realized was, you know, I don't need to have an opinion about everything. Like, matter of fact, like an opinion is just an opinion, but we run around treating our opinions as facts or other people's opinions as facts. And like, that's not the goal. The goal is to be kind, not to be right. Like, I don't ever find myself with people who are right about everything walking away. I'm like, oh, that was nice. They were right about everything, even when they weren't. You know, no, like, but people who are really kind, like when we had, you know, you're on my podcast, I was like, man, she's brilliant, but she's really kind too. Like I could feel the love and the heart coming through. And like, I have a heart, you have a heart, like that's humanity, right? And I want to be seen by other humans and to see other humans. I don't want to be right. Like that's not connection. And without connection, like what's the point? I mean, I was listening to Tim Ferriss's podcast today with Andrew Huberman on there. And Andrew Huberman's got such a good podcast himself too. And he was so brilliant, but he was talking about like the 6 kind of key factors to, you know, living a good, healthy life, mentally, spiritually, physically, whatever, emotionally. And he went through them and Tim Ferriss was like, well, if you had to pick 2, which 2 would you pick? Like if you could only do 2, and you know, like exercise was in there and all this. And he's like, I would pick sleep and I would pick connection with other humans. And he's like, and I'm an introvert, right? And like I used to tell myself, like, I don't need other people. Like I could do everything on my own. Like, dude, I would, if it was just me on earth, I would be like dead within like the day probably, because I'd really be bored first, but then I would definitely right. die because yeah. Oh, so long story short, I love people and it's okay that I don't always be around, want to be around them though, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Oh man. I want to lean into the self-sabotage comment that you made, because that numbing to, I think you worded it as feeling like you were supposed to know something, like you were supposed to have it figured out. It was difficult to admit, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what is next or what choice needs to be made. And so sometimes numbing can be the best option, or whatever form of self-sabotage is convenient or most normalized in our immediate social context, whatever it might be. So I do want to look at that a little bit closer and just hear more about what was your relationship to some of those self-sabotaging behaviors. What was it that helped you to see it for what it was, that, oh, this is a self-sabotaging behavior and I'm ready to make that shift? Like, what were the clues that helped you get out of that pattern?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was, for one, it's all avoidance, right? Any addiction, right? And it's like all addiction is the same thing. It's repetition with no payoff, right? And I was afraid of feeling the feels. And instead of processing and working through stuff, I was like, well, if I can't feel it, it can't hurt. And it was, then it became like self-flagellation, you know, punishing myself, because I knew I was giving away my power. I knew I wasn't doing what I was capable of being able to do. And I was so frustrated, but I didn't have the tools or the capacity at the time or the desire, I don't know, to like work through that and to get to like, hey, you know what? It's okay not being okay. Like it's totally okay not being okay. Nobody has the rule book to life, but I felt like something was like fundamentally wrong with me. And like, why are other people good at being humans and I'm not? And like, I was doing fine, but you know what? Like I made this story up that I needed to be this other way. And instead of actually going inside and like understanding, hey, well, why? Where is this coming from? You know, like, where are you maybe missing the truth? Or maybe asking somebody to help me see what better could look like. I try to do everything myself. And there's a great book by Anthony Kiedis from the Red Hot Chili Peppers called Scar Tissue. And really struggled with heroin addiction, like kept relapsing. And he's like, I'm like a multimillionaire rock star. How can I be addicted to heroin? You know, it's like very confusing for him. And he described it really well. He's like, you know, you have this huge, massive ego, but no self-esteem. And he used a really interesting visual. He's like, it's like you're a piece of poo, but he used a different word that the world revolves around, right? And that's what it feels like. It's like, everybody look at me, but don't look too close because I really hate what's going on in here. And so it's a very confusing, chaotic, disruptive place. And man, like how I got through that was like really perspective, you know, having people that I cared about, my family, my friends are like, hey, like you're capable of more than this. And when you do this, it hurts us. And that's what it turned me was the, I could punish myself. And I was in my 20s, right? Like, you know, I'm gonna live forever. But when I saw that it was hurting my mom and my brother and my best friend and the pain that it was causing them, like that's what shifted me. And I'm like, okay, this isn't about me. Like that was the first time I was able to really see, like I knew that, but I didn't understand it until right then. And when I saw the pain, like on their faces, I'm like, all right, cool. It was like a switch, like flip, boom. And I was like, I'm not drinking anymore. And like, that was the last time. So.
It's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I think so many leaders struggle with this for all the reasons you're naming. And I think there's a piece of toxic work culture that we don't even quite realize is happening when we don't show up in our authenticity or in alignment with our values, where if we're perpetuating harmful toxic work culture, we're actually creating conditions at work and in our social dynamics that also cause people to go turn to the coping mechanisms. And so, I mean, good on you for kind of looking in that mirror of the people that you love and making that decision. I think for many, it's not as easy as turning it off, or maybe they try and then there's a trigger and now they're right back in it. They're back in another spiral, whether it's alcohol or even caffeine. Like I think sometimes I forget how much of a drug caffeine actually is. Yeah. And I remember one of my most stressful jobs, not only was I coping with wine in the evening, like all the time, but I could not show up to the more stressful meetings without the ritual or the coping mechanism of walking myself up the street to my favorite coffee shop, getting a fancy latte with oat milk. And I was like, this is the only self-soothing that I know how to do to force myself to step into a context that I don't actually want to step into. And it's going to be stressful and I'm going to get pushback and there are going to be unhealthy dynamics. And I felt like I have to do this. Like this is my job. I'm the COO. I have to go to this board meeting. I don't have a choice. So some of these coping mechanisms, I mean, I feel like we could have a whole episode just on self-sabotage and culture that perpetuates some of these things, but I just really appreciate the vulnerability there. And I've shared in some previous episodes on the show of my own journey with alcohol and addiction and how that has been a struggle. So I think it's really important that we talk about this together as entrepreneurs, as leaders, as executives, because it's everywhere in our culture. So I appreciate getting to hear your journey there.
Yes, man. Hopefully it was helpful for somebody to hear, because I mean, we're all in the same thing together. Like I'm not ashamed or whatever. It is what it is, you know, like I was there and now I'm here. And so I just learned to do better, right? That's all we can ask.
Yeah. This shift that we seem to be in, it's almost like, yes, it can be hard and there's a lot to figure out, but I feel really glad to be alive now and in this current shift and getting to come back to reconnecting and acknowledging, like you just said, of like, wow, we are social creatures. We actually need one another. And if you get into the biomimicry space, we are actually classified as a superorganism, which is kind of cool. So we have these collective intelligence potentials that we are largely underutilizing and are untapped in our dominant culture that we're in right now. But this relational piece, I think you're so spot on. Cause even as an introvert, it's like, I wouldn't last very long either if I had no other people to be in the human gift, like the collective human gift of love. I think that love and generosity is really what our species is incredible at providing. But when we get into a different sort of programming and forget that and fall for the illusion of separation between us and nature or masculine, feminine, all these polarities that we have built an entire society on right now, at least in Western culture, you get pretty fragmented. So this moment of like bringing it all back together is super hard, but you said it earlier. It's like, we can do hard things and we can build versions of ourselves to be able to navigate this and kind of come home to ourselves, come home to nature and to each other. So yeah, Kevin, I just can't thank you enough for sharing your wisdom here today. And I want to really take us home here and just ask, you know, again, in your work with clients, I really see you as doing healing work, because the inner work is the work in my opinion. And you're doing such incredible work when it comes to transformational leadership and helping people step into their gifts, find their purpose. If someone is kind of just getting started on this journey or struggling to make that shift, what if you could have a megaphone out to that whole circle of folks, what healing wisdom might you offer to soothe their journey?
Yeah. Okay. Well, wisdom might be a strong word, but I'll give you the best idea I can think of. And it's really kind of a couple of parts. For one, it's, you know, mastering that art of choosing love over fear, right? Because, you know, when we're coming from love, that's the truth. And, you know, it's like unconditional love. Like, I don't need you to be a certain way for me to love you. Like, I love you no matter what. I don't even have to like you to love you, right? I love you because we're all of the same thing, right? And like, that's like way easier said than done, right? Like, as soon as we get in the car, somebody's going to cut us off or whatever. You're like, oh, I love you. Don't wave with that finger, right? And I think one of the ways to get there is to really stop taking yourself so damn seriously, right? Like, you know what? Life's meant to be enjoyed. And like, stop assigning responsibility to other people for how you feel. Like, that is such an important skill. Like, you can't make me feel anything. Like, you can do things that I don't care for sure. But you know what? Like, I get to decide what's going on with me internally. And it takes courage to go in there. And it's not a one-time event. It's a daily practice of just understanding, like, what types of things am I doing with my thoughts, with my feelings, with my actions that are sabotaging me from staying aligned with, you know, the very best parts of me? And man, it's, you know, it's just a lifelong evolution. It's, again, it's not being perfect. It's just being gentle with yourself and the people around you and just doing better.
That whole point at the end there is, I think, going to stay with me after this episode. Kevin, I just want to thank you again for spending the time being so present in this conversation. And we've traversed all kinds of topics here, but I can't help but feel that anyone listening probably has at least a few nuggets of additional ways to shine that light of illumination on themselves, on their choices, on their own sacred leadership practice. It's okay that this looks different for all of us. Every transition is going to be different as we step into finding ourselves and aligning with purpose. And so I again appreciate so much the perspectives and the language that you bring around this. It's really some potent, advanced language for us to be working with and reflecting on. And I want to invite you to share, for anyone who is interested in learning more about you or working with you, what are some of the best places to get in touch and learn more?
Any social media, just Kevin Keppel or kevinkeppel.us. You know, like, any way I could help, just feel free to reach out. And I love serving leaders who are looking to serve other people. Again, we're all in this thing together. If I can help, let me know what it looks like.
Amazing. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to the Living Leaders Podcast. Together, we're part of a crucial movement, a collective shift towards a just and sustainable future. Remember, every single one of you is a catalyst for change. Whether you're at the helm of a corporation, nurturing a community, leading a family, or guiding your personal path, our journey towards regenerative leadership is more than a concept. It's a call to action. Let's embrace this transformation with unity and purpose. Until next time, lead with vision, lead with love.